Hello, I'm Lisa Brian Baines. This is number 0212, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0212. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Brian Dietzen, one of the stars of NCIS, the hit CBS television series. He has a new independent film out called Congratulations.
Essentially, a guy says to his girlfriend, I love you, will you marry me? And she says, I love you, why would you want to ruin this? So really, from the jump, you see that these two have very disparate views of what marriage is and what it means. Him thinking it's the ultimate expression of love and her thinking it's pretty much the end of the road for a relationship.
Ben Patrick Johnson, who is a voiceover god and the voice of this show. You know, just having a good voice isn't enough to be successful in the business that Ben is in.
Having a particular voice that sounds one way or the other is just what gets you in the door. It's then how you perform, how you're able to take the words on the page and make them come to life and really make them believable, which is, for the longest time, we were making stuff come to life, but it wasn't necessarily so believable, and that's the trend lately. It's almost like you need to be a better actor. You have to be able to be convincing in what you're doing.
Stuart Nallman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nallman, and Book Banter gets fashionable and gritty with My Dirty Clothes, another work-related book that the boss may not like, actually. So if you like my style, drop by later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0212, was Alicia Brian Baines, the newly minted late night anchor of News Final at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. And congratulations, Alicia, for getting the new gig. You've earned it and deserved it. And thank you very much for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. It's very much appreciated. A program, by the way, that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, the twerking performance by Miley Cyrus with Robin Thicke at the MTV Music Video Awards made headlines and was the talk of the internet thanks to the sexual nature of the performance by the 20-year-old singer, as if it was, you know, actual news. Anyway, but no one was more put out by the performance than a fellow by the name of Steve Schmellar. Now, Steve created the number one hand, like the one that Cyrus used as a prop. You know the number one hand, right? Well, Steve came up with that giant hand-shaped foam glove with the index finger extended to create the "we're number one" gesture way back in 1971 when he was 16 years old, and he did it for his high school basketball team. He complains that Miley took an honorable icon that is seen in sporting venues everywhere and degraded it. But the VMA show wasn't the only place the finger got attention last week. The Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, which is a minor league baseball team associated with the Philadelphia Phillies, gave away 3,500 of the foam fingers at a game in honor of Prostate Cancer Awareness Night. So, clearly, Miley wasn't the only one that was bending over. That's all I'm saying. Speaking of Miley Cyrus, her performance and twerking and other things were all part of one of the segments I do on Global News. It's a relatively new weekend segment called What I Learned on the Web This Week, which I do as part of what I anchor on the weekend newscast here in Montreal. And what I've been doing is I've been putting those segments up on my YouTube page, so if you'd like to see all those segments, it's sort of like doing the Stuff File with pictures. That's basically what's happening in these segments. And they're up on my YouTube page, and each week I'm also putting the newest version of them up on the What's On page of the Stuff File program. So for instance, if you go to this week's show, which is 0212, as just mentioned a few moments ago by the lovely and talented Alicia Brian Baines, you can find a link to the YouTube page for the most recent edition of What I Learned on the Web This Week. And you can also go to my YouTube page and look at all the previous ones, because they're all there cataloged and you'll find them. And share them with all your friends. They're a hoot. There's the shameless plug of the week for the program. Anyway, moving right along. In August, a federal judge in Seattle sentenced Alicia Cruz, age 31, to 4 years in prison for violating court-ordered drug treatment stemming from a 2001 conviction of stealing identities of more than 300 people. Now, Cruz had won a second chance, drug treatment instead of prison, by convincing the judge that she was no longer a crook, that this time she would abandon her identity theft life and go straight. Added Cruz, and this is the quote of the day considering her situation, "I'm a different person now." Yes, actually, being a different person is what got her into trouble in the first place. Yeah. A lawyer and former spokesman for the judiciary of Kenya filed a petition in July with the International Court of Justice in The Hague in the Netherlands seeking a retrial of Jesus Christ and naming as defendants the State of Israel, King Herod, various Jewish elders, the former Emperor of Rome, that would be Tiberius, and of course Pontius Pilate. Dola Indidis claims that the proceedings before Roman courts did not conform to the rule of law at the time, and Dola's claim has been dismissed by the High Court in Nairobi. And a spokesperson for the ICJ said the court has no jurisdiction in such case, for it is not one between governments. Okay, clearly, no one is thinking of any kind of statutes of limitation here, I'm guessing. Because that would be a pretty old case to bring back up. I mean, there are cold cases, and then there are cold cases. A Rhode Island man's lawsuit against two churches near his home alleges their bell ringing disrupts his life and contributed to the breakdown of his marriage. John Devaney, age 64, of Narragansett, filed a U.S. District Court lawsuit against the St. Thomas More Catholic Parish and St. Peter's by the Sea Episcopal Church, alleging bell ringing by the churches have violated his rights and denied him the peaceful enjoyment of his property. Devaney, who is acting as his own attorney, Kel Surprise, alleges the bell ringing has left him irritable and led to arguments that contributed to the end of his marriage. The lawsuit names Attorney General Peter Kilmartin, Diocese of Providence Bishop Thomas J. Tobin, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, Pope Francis, and St. Peter's by the Sea Administrator Linda O'Neill as defendants. Yeah, okay, now this lawsuit doesn't have a chance in hell. Pardon the obvious pun. By the way, I'm assuming these churches have existed for decades. You know, they don't just spring up, especially nowadays. People aren't building churches in North America, not as much as they used to, with bells. Anyway, having said that, would it be fair to say that he moved into a house where nearby churches had bells? That should be an assessment that rings true, if you ask me. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Sandra Ross Killey walked onto her front porch in Denver, Colorado on a Friday and was shot dead by a neighbor. That Monday, the Denver Housing Authority locked her family out of the place, even her mother and son, who lived with her but were not on the lease. "We understand the family is under duress," the agency said in a statement, "but we will be locking the unit because they have no legal rights." Wow. Memo to the Denver Housing Authority: you confuse "they have no legal rights" with "you have no decency." That's all I'm saying. Shall we get to our first guest? Yes, let's do that. Actor Brian Dietzen is best known for his role as Jimmy Palmer, the assistant coroner on the hit CBS drama NCIS. But he has managed to find the time to write, produce, and star in a feature film called Congratulations, which is now available for purchase and or rental on iTunes. Brian is on the line from L.A. with us right now to talk about his independent film. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being on the program with us. Where did you find the time to squeeze this in?
Well, anyone who watches the show knows that I don't exactly have the Michael Weatherly, Mark Harmon schedule on that show. So I have quite a few more days off than some of the leading guys on our program. So in my time off, I decided I wanted to start writing and making movies on my own, and was lucky enough to find a group of people that I went ahead and did it with. So it was far from an individual effort. We had a really great collaboration.
Now tell us what the story about Congratulations is all about.
Well, essentially, a guy says to his girlfriend, I love you, will you marry me? And she says, I love you, why would you want to ruin this? We have such a good thing going. So really from the jump, you see that these two have very disparate views of what marriage is and what it means. Him thinking it's the ultimate expression of love and her thinking it's pretty much the end of the road for a relationship. My writing partner, Abby Miller, from the TV show Justified, and I, you know, we noticed that amongst our 30-something friends, most of them are not married as of right now, and you know, through talking to a bunch of them, realizing that that's become less and less of a priority for some of our friends, and we want to kind of explore that. So, the movie was an absolute blast to make, and seeing this character pretty much trying to unring that bell for the rest of the movie, especially when he comes to visit his mother's house, and she has a huge congratulations banner unfurled. The mother, played by Deborah Jo Rupp from That 70s Show fame, she unravels this big congratulations banner, thinking that of course they're engaged now because my son said he was going to ask her. And so they pretend to be engaged for the weekend, and one thing leads to another, and you see how the question of marriage actually tears these two apart instead of bringing them closer together.
Now, they always say when you're writing, write what you know. But you yourself, if I'm not mistaken, you've been married for over a decade yourself, have you not?
Yeah, I have. I've been very happily married for over 10 years now, and I have two kids, a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And when we started writing this, that was the piece of advice that we got was write from what you know. And Abby is happily in a relationship with her guy for several years now. But you know, they're decidedly not married. They didn't, wasn't something that she was aching for. So we said, well, that's cool. Let's take that kind of nugget of truth from the two of us and kind of dramatize that and see where these two characters can go. So it was really fun to work from that standpoint. And then once we got on our two directors on the project, Eric Levy and Juan Cartarelli, they rewrote the whole project with us, and it really turned into a great labor of love over the course of a hiatus.
After getting through the writing process and then going ahead and producing this film, what was the biggest stumbling blocks or the biggest learning curve for you as someone who's putting together a film like this for the first time?
Well, one of the big things is that learning what a budget really is on a movie like this. We didn't have a lot of money. And, you know, for an independent film such as this that deals with it doesn't have guns blazing, there's no gratuitous nudity or anything like that. It's really a relationship drama, which really has a specific niche, and a lot of people do really love it, but it's a difficult type of film to sell, you know, outside of independent film circuits and film festivals. So getting the money together was very difficult to do, but also learning that that the one great thing about doing a film like this is that people want to work on good quality films, you know, from the crew to the actors to anyone who's willing to just pitch in for a night or two to help out in the shooting process. So what was really wonderful to see was how many people came out and lent their time, lent their experience, getting paid far, far, far less than what they're worth. And, you know, all with the knowledge that they're helping to create some art here And they're also hoping that all of us continue to produce more works, and hopefully, you know, we can pay them more on the next thing. Deborah Jo Rupp, incidentally, she flew herself out from New York, and we, you know, didn't really have much money whatsoever to pay her on this thing, but she really enjoyed the script. She loved the character, and said, "Oh, you know, honey, we can do it. You know, we can do this for no money." Essentially, you know, we went by SAG standards and whatnot, but essentially, you know, doing it for free. And it was really wonderful to see that sort of spirit come forward, and a lot of people supporting this film with like I said, far, far less than they're worth.
As a producer, was there anything you picked up from the nuts and bolts day-to-day working of a well-oiled machine like the television show NCIS? Is there anything you picked up from the people you worked with there that you applied to putting together this film?
You know, it's very interesting that you ask that, because I think that on a television show like NCIS, it's been around for over a decade, we know everybody that works on the camera crew, electric, hair, makeup, you name it, down to craft service, up in production office. Everyone knows their job and does it so incredibly well, so efficiently by this time, that, you know, our first couple of seasons, we'd have these, you know, 18, sometimes 20-hour days that were just crazy. And now, you know, we're in and out of there pretty quickly. You know, very, very rarely do we go over 12 hours in a day, which is a short shooting day for a 1-hour drama. 14 hours is sometimes the norm on these shows. So seeing that happen and realizing, yes, that can happen, it was interesting going into a feature film where, you know, it's a ragtag crew of people that haven't worked together before, and so kind of remembering, you know, where every production starts out at is not having worked together for 8 to 10 years. That yeah, has to be patience and let people find their feet over the first couple of weeks. But I'm happy to say that we turned in our 12-hour days on this movie as well. So we didn't keep people away from their families for too long.
I mentioned in the introduction that it's available for purchase and/or rental on iTunes. Is there any other way of getting the film?
Yes, it's also on Vudu, on Xbox, PlayStation, YouTube, and if I'm not mistaken, it'll be maybe coming to Hulu. I'm not positive, though.
Okay. I got to ask you an NCIS question, and you mentioned earlier that, you know, you don't have the kind of hours that Mark has on the show. With the departure of the character of Ziva David, does that possibly mean a little more time for Jimmy Palmer?
Who knows? I mean, at this point, we're shooting, I believe, the fifth episode right now, and it's been pretty standard workload for the character Jimmy Palmer thus far. I don't think I'll get in trouble for saying that, but for revealing that, but you know, it's definitely a change for the show. So I think the show is going to kind of find its feet in a new way now, since that character is no longer with us. But the one thing I'm very, very excited for was Cody did come back and worked on the second show with us. And while I wasn't there for her scene, boy, everyone said that she just did a wonderful job, and so did Michael in their scenes together. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. So the film, congratulations. Again, you wrote it, produced it, and starred in it. It's now out there. Are there more films in Brian Dietzen?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm working on a feature script right now about fatherhood, and you know, it's kind of an examination of the definitions of fatherhood and that sort of thing. Is you know, in a similar vein to Congratulations, a kind of challenging current perceptions of what it is and what it means, it's exciting to do. It's a wonderful way to kind of stretch your creative muscles a little bit outside of the awesome show that I get to work on every week on NCIS.
Have any of the cast and crew of NCIS had a chance to see your film?
Yeah, actually, Paulie Perrette really fell in love with it. She just absolutely loved it. And David McCallum was so awesome. He's very supportive on the first night that I was screening it here in Los Angeles. He showed up. It was for a cast and crew screening, and but I thought I'd give him a call and say, you know, just on the off chance you're not busy next week, if you'd like to come to this thing. And he said, you know, he emailed me back in 30 seconds and said, make sure my name's on that list. And he really loved it as well. And the whole cast has been really, really supportive. And a lot of our crew actually came out. The crew from NCIS came out to a couple of the different festivals that we played at in town here. So it's been really, really nice. That everyone has always said, oh, that whole group at NCIS really is like a family. And I'm happy to say that that's true. It's not an exaggeration. There's a lot of support amongst all of us. And whether it's going to see, you know, Rocky Carroll in a play or seeing a movie that Mark has done or coming to see this indie that I produced and started, people have been really, really wonderful with one another in this cast and in the crew.
Excellent. Well, the film is congratulations, and congratulations to you, Brian, for getting this done. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Actor Brian Dietzen, who wrote, produced, and stars in the indie feature film, Congratulations. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0212, and you'll find links to the iTunes site for the movie.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Ben Patrick Johnson, the voice god. Plus, Stuart Nolman is back with another edition of Book Banter, and of course, there is indeed an Idiot of the Day on a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But first, we have more Stuff File news right here, right now, for your listening pleasure. A cat jumped on a Chevrolet Cavalier and told Anthony Schroyer, age 51, of Connellsville, Pennsylvania, to steal it. That's what Schroyer told authorities. Police say he complied. Schroyer also told them the cat directed him to rob a bank with a plastic gun. Police say he robbed it with a concealed item. He said he even obeyed the cat when he rammed a police car. According to police, Schroyer dropped a plastic bag on his way out of the bank, scattering $582 in cash, but he still had $990 on him when he was finally arrested. Judge John F. Wagner Jr. ordered Schroyer to serve 2.5 to 5 years in prison, submit to a mental health assessment, there you go, and repay $1,572. Now, you notice the cat didn't get charged in any of this. Clearly, a double standard, and you know how I feel about cats. They're evil. Little pieces of evil plotting against mankind. I keep warning people, but you don't listen. One of these days, you'll find out that I'm right, but of course, by that time, it will be too late. And I bet you the cat is somewhere enjoying that missing $582. Yeah. Moving right along, it's a common occurrence in sporting events, a fan jumping onto the field and being chased down by security. This time, it was a Toronto Blue Jays game at the Rogers Centre in Toronto. What makes this case interesting, though, is the Toronto police report on the incident. This is what the police report actually said. The Jays were surprisingly winning against the underrated Seattle Mariners, an official report begins. Our hapless Jays limped along to the bottom of the eighth inning. At one point, the Jays were considered World Series contenders. One can almost forgive the accused for his below-described actions. The suspect, identified only as Joseph, ran onto the field in what can only be described as an attempt to inject some kind of spark in our listless Jays, giving Jays fans a brief respite from their season-long agony. Joe was tackled and hauled off to jail, but the criminal charge, mischief, willfully interfered with the use, enjoyment, or operation of property, was dropped after he donated $1,000 to the Jays charity. Nicely written report. I guess the prosecutor didn't think the charge would stick since, you know, no one in the stands was actually enjoying the game. Yeah. Moving right along, after a bank robbery in Syracuse, New York, police tracked the suspect to a nearby apartment house. As they searched the building, a worker inside pointed them to the basement. He could hear someone calling for help. Police say the robber, Robin Guthridge, had tried to escape by climbing into a garbage chute on the building's 21st floor. Guthridge, who was 26, was found in the basement, next to a trash compactor, surrounded by scattered cash from the robbery. Officers called firefighters in to rescue him. He is hospitalized in critical condition. I did say 21st floor to the basement, right? Yeah, well, obviously. And he will be charged with robbery when he gets out of hospital. Or more accurately, if he gets out of hospital. He's just lucky to be alive. Yeah. A mother in a hurry in central China decided to breastfeed her young son while they sped through traffic on a moped. Witnesses say the tot, about aged 18 months, was crying on the bike as it weaved through busy roads in Henan province. So she suddenly lifted up her top, whipped out her breast, and started to feed him on the move, said one startled driver. But the impromptu meals on wheels earned the mother a tongue-lashing from local police. She was risking her life, her son's life, and the lives of all the others on the road, said the police spokesperson. We told her that if she carried on, we would confiscate her bike. Yeah, she gets to keep the kid, but they'll take away her bike. Priorities just a bit skewed there. And you know, I think that youngster at some point in the life will be a future thrill seeker. You wait and see. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, no one inside Darlene's Tavern in Sudlersville, Maryland, even noticed when a bomb was dropped on the bar's parking lot, but someone noticed the cloud out the window and yelled that there was a car on fire. There was no fire, and once the dust settled, everyone went back to drinking. But the bar owner, Lena Hartlove, went out and found a hole, quote, so deep and wide and everything, unquote, that she called the police. The bomb was down so deep they ended up digging it out with a backhoe, she said. And once it was determined to be a bomb, police ordered the bar closed and everyone went home. It turned out to be a 35-pound inert practice bomb, which was accidentally dropped from a National Guard warplane during a training exercise. Of course, the bar patrons were unconcerned because, I mean, after all, they were there for the sole purpose of, you know, getting bombed. So, anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Anyone who has heard this show has heard the voice of Ben Patrick Johnson, one of the most prolific voiceover announcers ever. Heck, even if you've never listened to the show, you've heard the voice of Ben Patrick Johnson, because his voice is everywhere. I thought it would be interesting to have Ben on the show as a guest to talk about what he does, especially in light of a new movie that looks at his profession, that movie called In a World, which is starring Lake Bell. So Ben joins us on the line right now from California, from L.A. to be exact. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Peter. How you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Always a pleasure to have a chance to talk to you, sir.
And likewise, my friend, and likewise. It's interesting because the film is called In a World, and that's, you know, the classic first line of trailers that became so almost sort of hackneyed and cliche. In a world where this and that and the third thing. And we really don't use that anymore as a device, but that's sort of the calling card, and that's how we all identify trailers. So it makes sense to call the film that.
Now, I'm sure there are some young people out there who want to get into the business, and they hear your voice, and then they suddenly decide, you know, out of anger, they're going to do an emergency tracheotomy with a Bic pen in their throat. Because, I mean, the way you sound, you've always sounded that way. I've heard stuff from you when you were younger, and you have some old videos out there. You sound like you always have sounded.
Yeah, throughout my adult life, I've had basically the same voice, and it's a fairly big, full voice, which is both, you know, gets me in the door, but it also blocks certain other things, and it can be challenging at times because, especially lately, there's a trend towards a flatter, kind of quieter, more pulled back reed, and that's something that some of us who have the bigger voices have had to adjust to do less, to be less, bring less to the table. And, you know, we've spent our lives wanting to bring more to the table.
It's also one of those professions, sadly, that everyone thinks they can do. Do you find that that's a situation that everyone says, oh, I could do that. That's easy.
Yeah. And I don't think that it's easy, but they say, hey, I've got a good voice. I should try this. Well, it's you know, having a particular voice that sounds one way or the other is just what gets you in the door. It's then how you perform, how you're able to take the words on the page and make them come to life and really make them believable, which is, for the longest time, we were making stuff come to life, but it wasn't necessarily so believable, and that's the trend lately. It's almost like you need to be a better actor. You have to be able to be convincing in what you're doing.
So what were some of the biggest stumbling blocks for you when you first started?
When I first started, it was doing too much, and it was copying and in a world and blah, 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 sounding too much like a bit of a trained monkey as opposed to just letting the copy come out of you. When you're starting, of course, you need to get that confidence. You need to get your chops and the read down. But and I could be talking out of both sides of my mouth here when I say that you have to listen to what's out there. You've got to and sort of imitate, and it will become your own. But be sure you're listening to what's going on right now and not what you have classically in your head in terms of what trailers sound like, because there really has been a change.
When do you get to the point where you know, where you found your voice as opposed to, quite frankly, other people telling you what you should sound like?
Well, we still go through that to a degree. I have several reads that have become sort of in pocket, and it takes, you know, a year, two, 3 years of doing something. What is it they say, 10,000 hours you invest and you become a master at something? I think they were talking about chess, not selling motion pictures and television programs. But I think the same rule applies. It takes just a certain number of hours. And it took me a few years of doing it on a fairly consistent basis before it just locked in and you could do it, you know, halfway in your sleep.
As prolific as you are, every person I've ever talked to who's done something in the business, there's always that one thing they say, you know, gee, I wish I could do that. What's that?
Well, I have various friends in the business who have been the announcer for the Oscars, and I would love to read the Oscars and have that gig. I do some stuff with Jimmy Kimmel Live oftentimes after the Oscars. In the last couple of years, we've done bits and sketches and so forth, but it's not the same as saying, ladies and gentlemen, from the, well, it used to be the Kodak, and now it's going to be the Dolby Theater in Los Angeles, you know, the annual Academy Awards. Boy, that's a prestigious gig.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the awards, because nowadays we're hearing more and more women doing the award shows.
Yes, yes.
Which,
Cheatering Fox says that she does a great job. She's a talented woman. And, you know, there are not that many women in the business at the level that of the top guys. But there are a few, including Melissa Disney. And Cheatering is just amazing. She does the Oscars, and she's done them off and on. I don't know if she's done them consistently every year, but she's done them for a few years off and on, and she's fantastic, and you know, you can't begrudge her anything.
Which brings us back full circle, because the movie In a World, which stars Lake Bell, talks about basically women in the business, Lake Bell playing a voiceover actor, and dealing with the aspects of what one has to go through in that profession, especially as a woman. Do you find that it's still difficult for women out there that you know who are trying to get into the business?
Oh, very much so. There just aren't as many opportunities. It's changing. It's expanding for women. But again, still, when you hear the movie ads, when you hear the big promos, it's easily 95% men. The occasional woman's voice is, oh, that's a nice, bright surprise. And it is a nice, bright surprise, but it's unfortunate that it remains a surprise. You know, I don't want to lose any work, but I would love to see more of my female colleagues having a crack at some of this stuff.
Well, speaking of losing work, I know some of the things that some voiceover announcers are not necessarily crazy about. You mentioned earlier that it is an acting gig, and more companies seem to be going to actors.
Actors are actorly voices as opposed to big, booming announcer voices. And yeah, but you're absolutely right. There are more actors doing trailers. Or another thing, another trend is, when you go to the movie theaters before the main feature, you'll see trailers, and you'll notice fewer and fewer of them have any voiceover on them at all. You may have one that has a voiceover, and then three or four that don't. Whereas it used to be every single one had a voiceover. So that's a big change for us. Whether you're one of the big voice guys, whether you're a vanilla voice, or whether you're a woman, there's just fewer opportunities now.
Now, one of the other things, too, is you have always had a home studio, much like I do. I like to refer to it as radio without pants. Has that made it easier for you, or has it made it more difficult because there are more people trying to do what you do without going to a studio? I mean, the equipment has become so much cheaper and easier to get.
I mean, it used to be you had to be in Los Angeles or New York to do this gig at all. Now you could essentially do it from anywhere. I think there are still advantages to being on the ground here in one of the big, huge production centers, just because, if nothing else, the familiarity, and you can go shake hands and have a coffee or a drink with the producers and meet them. But I don't think that the phenomenon of home studios has hurt me in any way. It allows, when you're hot and when you're really working, it allows you to do more sessions in a given day because, frankly, you're just not driving around from appointment to appointment and waiting and et cetera. As you know, Don LaFontaine classically would drive around. He's the godfather of voiceovers, who's no longer with us, unfortunately. And he would drive around a limousine, or ride around, I should say, in a limousine from session to session. And I remember at one point, the biggest day he'd ever had, he did 20-some recording sessions, bouncing from place to place, and they would stack them up in this studio and then bounce over to the other studio. And that was, a 12-hour schlep of a day for him. I've managed to come pretty close to that once or twice, but it's such a different game when you're doing it from home, because it's just, oh, let me get a coffee and let me do this, and oh, here comes another one. The digital box goes chirp, chirp, then it's time to do the next session.
What if you were to talk to a young Ben Patrick Johnson, the old saying, if I knew then what I know now.
I knew then what I know now.
Yeah. What would you tell young Ben?
Take nothing for granted. Know that gigs come and gigs go. Know that you will not always be hot, that you will not always be flavor of the month. And know that flavor of the month rotates. It comes back again at times. Don LaFontaine, I remember classically, I asked him once, how's it going? And he said, I'm just wondering what the hell happened to my career. And then it came back and he was, number one again for a stretch of years. Plan for the future, I would tell myself. Save your money, I would tell myself. Don't get a big head, which thankfully I think I didn't the first time around. I don't need to necessarily go back and give myself that advice, but it's always good advice. Stay humble is more good advice.
Again, with all the work that you do, do you actually worry that any gig is your last gig, or does that bother?
Not the last gig, but you wonder if it's if it's the brick that the center the center stone and the arch, and then things will tumble as a result of that. I think we all have those fears about our work, and especially those of us who work as freelancers. When you have a handful of really big gigs, and they do come and go, they really do, no matter who you are. And when you lose one, it's tough. I lost a big one this fall, it's just wow, it's disorienting. And there are those moments, those hours of, where are things going for me? Is this the end of my career? And no, it isn't. And people need to calm down, and I need to calm down when when I get in those moments of headspace.
And which young pup do I have to kill?
Exactly. No, it's not much young pups. It's just, what did I do wrong?
Well, for those who know your voice but can't exactly place it. I mean, you've done a lot of Disney films, right? A lot of Fox TV.
A lot of Disney films. The thing that people hear me the most on nowadays is Fox Television. They hear me a lot there. They hear me hear some on CBS. Anyone who listens to Bloomberg or tunes in online, I'm on Bloomberg Radio and Bloomberg Television and all of their podcasts and online kind of stuff. I'm the voice of Bloomberg. So those are some of the main places that you would hear me.
And, of course, you're the voice of the Stuff File program, which gives...
The Stuff File, which is, you know what, if nothing else, I've got that, and that's pretty significant. I'm rather proud of that.
Makes us sound important.
Indeed. You are important, Peter.
Always a pleasure, Ben, to talk to you. And
my pleasure as well.
Thanks again for being on the program with us and taking some time out of what is... always for you a very busy day.
It is indeed. We were sandwiched in as we were getting ready to record this. With this client done and got to sneak in before this other client comes in. So yeah, and I'm happy to be able to contribute to the show.
And we're happy to have you, Ben Patrick Johnson. Around these parts, we just call him the Voice God. You can check out his website at benpatrickjohnson.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0212, and you'll find the link to his site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It's back to school time, and if you have school-aged children, they've probably already come home with homework, not only for themselves, but for you, too. Nowadays, one of the first things many schools ask parents to do is to sign several waivers and authorization forms. By acknowledging our responsibilities up front, schools hope to minimize conflicts and even protect against lawsuits. These kind of forms weren't required when many of us went to school, but things are different now. Nearly half of all teachers and administrators say that they've been threatened with a lawsuit. Let's be fair, teaching is a pretty tough job these days. And this is a good time to remind ourselves that we're all teachers, too. Our children watch us to see how we handle difficult situations, and we constantly need to use these opportunities to teach the importance of respect and civility. Learn about our effort to bring more civility to the civil justice system. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, Stuart Nolman is indeed here with another edition of Book Banter. Hello, Stu.
Hey, Peter. Well, it's a new season, actually.
Well, kind of. Well, depends. New autumnal season or new television season? Which season are you referring to?
Autumnal TV books, because a lot of... new releases coming out over the next few months. Like for example, there's Stephen King has a new book, a sequel to The Shining called Dr. Sleep. So, what happens after Danny escaped the Overlook Hotel. There's a much-anticipated biography of J.D. Salinger, which is going to be out. And, there's plenty of new books coming out. I'm looking forward to the regular visits by the courier companies with nice big parcels filled with new releases.
Excellent. But what are we talking about this week?
Well, speaking of seasons, we're talking about the clothing industry. They have their seasons too.
Yes, they do. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you know what? At the beginning of the book in question, called My Dirty Clothes, a Montreal author, his name is Stick. That's his nom de plume. He writes this about working in the garment industry. He said, there's a common understanding shared by anyone who has ever worked in the clothing business, which is at the end of the day, no matter how much you love fashion, perks, etc., there are definitely better ways to make money.
Hmm.
Which is why after reading this book, My Dirty Clothes, it resonated with me so clearly about the garment, or as my people say, the schmata business.
Yes.
And it's very harsh realities, because when I was in high school, I did work at a warehouse for three very hot summers. So aside from the glamour of fashion shows and fashion weeks, the racy, provocative clothing line ads that you see in magazines, billboards, and bus shelters, and the thrill that you get from buying the latest hot fashions at chain stores and boutiques, this book gives you the cold, hard reality of the garment trade, that it's a vivid example of a cutthroat dog-eat-dog business. Now, the book offers about 40 short stories of different aspects of the garment trade, from the glitzy haute couture offices to the sweatshops of India to the egos where garmentos and fashionistas will have no scruples of shoving a colleague under the bus in order to get fame and fortune as a means of survival.
Under a literal bus in some cases.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. If you're going to happen to be along 7th Avenue in New York, you may just see that quite vividly. But the one thing about this book, which stuck in my mind as I was reading each story, was if the line crossed between fact and fiction, because some of the stories are too way out to believe that they actually happened, yet there are some that you have to believe that drawn from Stick's previous experiences in the trade. He did work in the garment trade in New York. And they're more expository in nature. However, each one becomes more and more luridly fascinating to read and makes you want to discover more about the dirt behind the glitz of the fashion world. Some of my favorite stories in the book include one called Vulgar, of how a young female employee of a soon-to-be-closed clothing manufacturer sort of keeps busy during her final 2 weeks of employment while collecting a paycheck before the trustee shuts its doors for good. A story called Never Too Late to Quit, about how a newly hired textile salesman goes along with a veteran salesman on his first day on the job and really learns what it takes to make that sale. And one called There Is No Santa, which is a terrific, harsh explanation of why the garment industry is such a horribly difficult industry to work for and why it's become so cutthroat. So basically,
has it really become cutthroat, or has it always been cutthroat?
Well, even more so. I mean, it's become very, very competitive these days. And there's the number of clothing lines or clothing agencies and manufacturers are getting much, much smaller. And the owners are younger and they're much, much more aggressive than I remember when I was working those summers back in the 1970s.
Wow.
So, and my parents were always relating that to me because they were involved in the garment industry as well. So they were salespeople also. So they told those stories to me and my brother and sister. So we knew about it quite a bit. But all in all, My Dirty Clothes airs out the dirty laundry on the clothing industry and will make you think very carefully before you buy an item of clothing at an exclusive boutique or a discount chain store. And of all the egos, backstabbing, heartaches, and the harsh realities that are behind it.
You know, you mentioned the garment district briefly in the United States, in New York.
Yeah.
And that's always been a problem for me with the original movie, King Kong.
And why is that?
If you recall, after he was shot down, I mean, first of all, I could never understand the idea of Fay Wray being held in the hand of an ape 100 stories above New York City yelling, "Let me go." I mean, that's just insanity on her part.
Yeah.
At this point, I'd be yelling, "I dig apes," if I'm hanging over the side of the building. But number two, after the ape is shot down,
yeah,
it's lying in the garment district for about a week. Do you know how many coats he would have been made into by that time?
Imagine the exclusive but limited edition King Kong line.
I mean, him lying in the garment district would be like Christmas for the Schmata business.
I know. Someone would have seen profits right there, you know?
Which is an irony in just what I said just there.
But, you know what, if you want another book I must recommend, not necessarily dealing with the garment industry, but working in general, any type of work, about making a living, making a buck, I may recommend Working by Stud Strakel, the late Chicago-based journalist who did a lot of oral histories. And this book was published in 1975. It's a lot of controversy because he interviewed different people working different trades, different professions, and being very vivid and very brutally honest about their work, their jobs, why they like it, why they hate it, why, you know, it's so difficult or sometimes hard to, you know, make a buck working your butt off. And actually, there were times when this book was actually banned by many schools in the United States because of the very harsh language, you know what I mean? Not the controversial language, but the profane language that is peppered throughout the whole book. But a terrific book. Now I know why Stud Strakel was such a great journalist and knew how to capture the voice of the people.
Excellent. So this current book, the one you were doing today, My Dirty Clothes, it's written by, and where can one find it?
Well, it's written by Stick. That's the name, the nom de plume. It's published by Sticky, a.k.a. Publishing. It's $19.99, and you could get it, check it out on Amazon. You could pick it up there.
Excellent. And how can people find you, Mr. Nolman?
Well, you can read me in the West End Times in print, but if you want to read me online, there's a new web address. It's www.west-n-times.com.
Excellent. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And now I will go, let's see what, let's see if that King Kong line, if people would be kind of retro, if they want to go retro with that kind of clothing.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We have a Idiot of the Day coming your way in just a matter of moments. But first, a few Stuff File news stories to share with you at this time and this juncture. A pair of enterprising thieves took a car wash to the cleaners. They used a powerful shop vac or shop vacuum cleaner to suck quarters out of a coin-operated machine, police said. The duo drew the suspicion of a passing police officer and failed to make a clean getaway. They had a good plan. They were enterprising. If they were successful, they could have returned night after night, according to Sergeant Gary Young. More often, thieves just use a crowbar. They get an A for effort, but an F for execution. Todd Herberg, age 53, and Scott Luker, age 55, were arrested on suspicion of burglary. More charges are pending. Now, you see, what gave the men away was a crude attempt at altering their vehicle's license plates. They used a piece of black electrical tape to change a D to a B, according to Young. The bandits were at work for about 12 minutes, sucking coins out of the coin dispensary of a standalone vacuum cleaner at the car wash. They used their own shop vac to do the work. It was powered by an inverter rigged inside their Jeep SUV to produce household current. Police haven't counted their stash of quarters yet, but the coin-operated machine probably held no more than $30. You know, I'm also guessing that this isn't the first time that they've tried this. I'm also guessing that as this story gets more press attention, it won't be the last time that it's successfully tried. You know, I mean, it's an ingenious idea. As the cop said, it was A for effort, just F for execution. It was that license plate. Justin Palmer, age 25, was driving in Bellingham, Washington, when he saw a pregnant woman smoking on the sidewalk. Now, that's something you don't see a lot of these days. When I was a kid growing up, you saw it a lot. Heck, you saw it everywhere, but, you know, different times. Apparently, seeing it, according to Justin, it forced him to do his civic duty, so he yelled out of the truck, "Who the heck smokes when they're pregnant?" "Obviously I do," replied the 8 months pregnant woman. At least she's got a sense of humor. According to court documents, the exchange grew heated, with Palmer calling the woman a white trash prostitute and telling her that she better put the smoke out now. The woman later told police that she ignored Palmer and kept walking, and that's when he allegedly pulled out a handgun and pointed it at her. Yikes. The light turned green, and he drove off, and the woman called the police. When officers caught up with Palmer, they found two handguns in his truck, and he acknowledged the exchange but denied pulling out a gun. But he pleaded guilty to felony harassment and was sentenced to 20 days in jail. As he is now a convicted felon, he must surrender his guns. Oh, poor baby. Yes. Right. You know, only the government can demand to have a say over someone's health decisions without having to, you know, pay for it. Anyway, Justin could have been the idiot of the day, because that was kind of an idiotic thing to do. I mean, his heart was in the right place, but, you know, pulling a gun on a pregnant woman, what's the point? Anyway, but he's not the idiot of the day. No, he's not. But this next person, this would be the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Oh, this one is short and sweet. Vade Bradley, age 39, was arrested on arson charges in Hayward, California in August after burning down an apartment house carport, totally destroying six vehicles. He was siphoning other people's gasoline in the carport when he decided to light a cigarette. Now, was Vade lacking comprehension of high school chemistry? Perhaps. Was he lacking common sense? That's possible. But you know, I'm guessing that he's simply an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0212. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0212. Email me at thestufffile.com. And you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. Don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.